Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. This week, we'll talk about home improvement shows, house hunting shows, cooking shows, and other cozy things. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. So stick around.
Check out the NPR One app for your phone. As summer winds down, it's a great way to find new shows and stories for the beach or your road trip. Great hand-curated podcasts and stories are always ready when you are on NPR One. Find it in your app store, NPR O-N-E.
Before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books, comics, and other things for the NPR website.
And Kat Chow, what do you do at NPR?
I work with Code Switch, the team that covers race and culture, and we have our own podcast.
That's right, you do the Code Switch podcast. And Barry Hardiman, what do you do at NPR?
I am an editor, more specifically a books editor at Weekend Edition.
Well, part of the reason why we all got together this week is that Barry and Kat are both well-known followers.
Well-known.
Kat is like pumping her fists with excitement. Kat has wanted to talk about HGTV here on Pop Culture Happy Hour
ever since I was born.
So we're going to talk about HGTV for a while. Then in our second segment, we'll talk about cooking shows for a while. I want to start with HGTV. Kat, what is your obsession with this genre? What is its basis?
Okay. So first, I think we should just start by talking about HGTV more generally,
right,
where there is just something so comforting about watching people go in and either renovate their homes or buy these homes. And the way I've been thinking about it lately is it's this complete fantasy because there's no way that I'm going to be able to afford a house or buy one or probably like redecorate my basement apartment. But each of these shows, we know that they're all fake. Their premise is completely just for the most part not true, where for house hunters, for example, you see them go in and you see them look at like two or three houses. And at this point, they've already bought their house.
There's been a lot of a lot of reporting,
right,
at least in some cases. I mean, it's very hard to verify.
Don't ruin
for sure
it.
But yeah,
I'm kidding.
That some of this is theater.
Right. It's a lot of theater. And I've been wondering, you know, why am I so drawn to this theater when I already know that they're going to land with a house that they love and they're just going to live happily ever after? I don't really know what that draw is, but it's just so comforting to me.
Yeah. You're a house hunters guy, Glenn, right?
I am.
You're a house hunter international, right?
Yeah. There's house hunters and house hunters international.
Yeah.
And the difference in the annoyance level of the two different people who are on those shows are the difference between a wasp sting and a sucking chest wound. The people on international are awful. They're universally awful. But, you know, I watch those shows because I'm an American. I got 2 ears and a heart. You know, it's just part of the deal. Actually, for those two shows, and for a lot of these shows, it helps to be Canadian because they are all stealthily Canadian.
A lot of them are stealthily Canadian.
Yeah,
this
house is about $250,000. It's like, aha, I got you, Tim Horton.
Unless
know what's going on there.
Unless it's like Island House Hunters or something.
I mean, to be fair, the international ones tell you explicitly where people are coming from and where they're going. But I'm also a beachfront bargain hunt person and
I was going to ask about beachfront bargain hunt because I saw that kind of going by the other day and I was like, what is the point of this one?
It's exactly the same. They're all the same. They're all exactly the same. But
same
ostensibly,
point.
The people on Beachfront Bargain Hunt and Lakefront Bargain Hunt have a lower budget than the kind of people who have just thrown money at the wind. I'm also a fan of the life, your Caribbean life, your island life, your mountain life, your log cabin living.
Or
farm. Why the difference there? What is that? Why can't it just be a log cabin life?
Huh.
Maybe because it's too similar to mountain life?
I don't know. Maybe
do you feel like that really resonates with you as someone who kind of has a log cabin?
Well, I was going to bring this up, actually. I have a second home, but I think this whole watching this over and over again put the bug in me and my husband to kind of think about getting a second home. And could we do it without being as insufferable as the people we see on TV? I don't know if we did.
How's it going?
Remains to be seen.
It's really nice, though. I've been there.
Yeah, but the sameness of this structure, all of these shows I've just mentioned, including House Hunters Off the Grid, House Hunters on Vacation.
I didn't know there was such a thing as House Hunters Off the Grid.
And House Hunters, Where Are They Now? Which is
I love that
my
one.
Favorite.
It is my favorite.
Because what it does is, you know that thing at the end where they're like 3 months later, and you're like, 3 months later is not long enough time. I need more time. I want to see the friction we've seen between this couple. I want to see it exacerbated after a year, 2 years, 5 years. I want to see what happens to, say, the white lady in dreadlocks who goes down to Ecuador to teach them about composting yoga studio.
Oh, no.
I want to know where that ends up.
Yeah.
So that's what that show's about. That you get to see a pit of despair.
Yes.
Yeah. How about you, Barry? Where are you on these shows?
So I love these shows, and for a couple of different reasons, some of which we've talked about. One, I also love structure, and I love them for the same reason, Kat, that you're talking about, that I love Law and Order.
Yeah.
So you know what's going to happen. You're going to see House 1, you're going to see House 2, you're going to see... So that is actually very comforting.
Yes.
So so there's that. But the thing that gets my soul is that at their heart, these are makeover shows.
Yeah.
And even the House Hunters, there's this sense of like people go in one way and they come out another.
Right. They're better off.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I don't care that it's theater. You know, I know it. Sometimes I like to make fun of the obvious parts of the theater, but there is something really, because I love Property Brothers.
Oh, so good.
Love me some Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Mm-hmm.
I love all form of reality makeover. And, you know, the thing about Property Brothers is that, A, you do learn a little something. I'm sort of in between you two. I just have the one home, but I have renovated before. And it's kind of fun. Every now and then, you know, you do learn that actually this synthetic wood is better and cheaper.
Or that shiplap is a thing.
Yes, exactly.
I know what shiplap is.
Yeah.
This is why. Yeah, I am a Property Brothers person also. Mm-hmm. And I think Property Brothers, if anything, is even more theater.
Yes.
I mean, it's certainly at least as much theater as House Hunters in some ways. Because the funny thing about Property Brothers is every episode of Property Brothers, the people start off, they say, we don't want to renovate. We just want a house that's move-in ready.
Yes.
Which would make you useless for Property
Brothers. For this show, right.
So they say, oh, we don't want to renovate. We want it to be move-in ready.
Right.
So they take them to a house that's all move-in ready, and they love it. And they say, oh, this is great. And they're ready to sign on the dotted line. And then they say, how much does it cost? And then the brother with the suit on, as opposed to the brother with the flannel shirt on, the brother with the suit on reveals that the house costs $5 million and their budget is only $2 million or something like that. And then they say, oh, I can't believe you built us up and then you tore us down. And that's what happens at the beginning of every single episode.
Right, which I means love that beginning.
If the Property Brothers take you to a house that doesn't have a purple toilet and like wasted away shag carpeting, that's the trick house.
Yeah.
Right.
This is the one.
If you can open the bathroom door, nope.
If all the doors, if all the doors open and shut easily, if there's not like just a bare light bulb hanging from a wire in the middle of the kitchen, this is the trap. You can't afford this house. And it's so ridiculous, and yet I find it soothing. I think Barry's exactly right with the Law and Order comparison. It's like you know you're going to get a resolution, even more than with Law and Order, where sometimes you are left in some sort of state of, you know, uncertainty or ambivalence about the ending. That will never happen on Property Brothers.
No.
You're never like, even on something like when TLC used to have Trading Spaces.
Oh,
yeah.
Every now and then on Trading Spaces, they would make the room over and somebody would be like, it's different. Like, always on Property Brothers, once the house is renovated, the people come back. They're never like, yeah, I'll get used to it. They always come back
tears.
And they're like,
there's
I can't
always tears.
It. And there's a there's a glass pitcher full of lemons and limes on the kitchen counter.
Mm-hmm. And Drew pretends to help move that one pillow over.
Ding, ding. That's right. And then the people come in and it's amazing. You know, I mentioned Trading Spaces. That was kind of my introduction to this genre.
It was everybody's introduction, I think, to this genre. Because that was really far back. You know, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And that's where all the bones of this whole network was built, even though it was a different network.
No,
but
it's true.
They learned things like...
And this old house, I should
I was just about to say, this old house. I was raised on this old house. Yeah. And
But Trading Spaces is personality.
Yeah, this old house is boring. This old house is How To. This is not How To.
Unless you really like those accents. And I do.
Sure. Yeah, but the thing about Trading Spaces that I just realized looking back on it is how cheaply done it was. That was the idea, of course, but everything looked crappy, especially if you got Frank. That's a thing that they've kind of pivoted away from, right? That show created a lot of the DNA, but then also it taught people what people don't want, which is people being disappointed.
Yeah, that's
we
true.
Want this thing to be on rails.
Although,
we want this to be slick.
Although the nice thing about always having them be happy is that every now and then when you're, as Kat says, searching for the in-between, when you do see like a twinkle, you see the woman look over her shoulder and be like, I'm going to move that couch.
Although it is true that what has emerged is a bunch of shows where people are happy. The Trading Spaces episodes where people are unhappy, some of them are classics.
Well, of course. Genius.
I don't know if you have
familiar
with Crying Pam.
Crying Pam.
But there's an episode well known as Crying Pam where Pam and her husband, I guess, had their like their family room redone and she hated everything.
The big question is, what do you think about the fireplace?
You guys are going to be fixing that in a little bit. So,
Yeah, well, I just see a lot of firewood.
I'm gonna have to leave the room now. You got disappointed. Well.
Boy, she's not happy. She's really not happy.
And she was crying, and it was very sad. And at the same time, it's so weird, and it's kind of a classic episode of Trading Spaces because you sit there and you think, she's serious.
Yeah.
She's really
it's her house.
Sad
this
about
is
this.
Real.
But the good thing is, it's going to be fine.
Exactly.
All they did was put a cardboard box around your fireplace.
Totally right.
Just take it down.
Press board in 2 minutes. It's back to normal.
It's press board. It's up there with maybe a glue stick. Just pull on it. It's going to come right off.
Right.
That's the good news. It's going to come right off.
Do you guys think that this entire genre, this entire channel has more to do has more in common with something like Keeping Up with the Kardashians than anything else? Because, again, people think the line you're handed with the Kardashians, especially by people who don't watch it, are people who watch that show just want to live that lifestyle. It's so sad. They're so pathetic, the people who watch that. Nobody who watches Keeping Up the Kardashian wants to be a Kardashian.
Everybody is
watching it to compare themselves to them and find the Kardashians wanting, right?
There are many people,
there's a sense of feeling superior. Similarly, I don't watch Caribbean Life to be like, oh, I wish I could have that lifestyle. I watch Caribbean Life so that I can feel a sense of power over it. And so when they show me a place, I can sit there like a pasha going, I don't like that carpet.
Yeah.
That isn't a sufficient view.
I will say, though, your assumption that people who are watching a reality show can only be watching it because they find it ridiculous is one I have made about other reality shows in the past and turned out to have been wrong.
Yeah.
Chloe is charming, guys. I just want to say that on behalf of Chloe
Kardashian. She is very charming. I would say that, I mean, for house hunting shows, maybe I agree with that premise, but for house hunting shows that also have that design element, like Fixer Upper,
part of that is legit fun.
I watch it because the couple Chip and Joanna Gaines,
they're just so charming,
darling, and like every other episode, they have a new like dog or goat or cat, and I mean,
got a new goat on the house making.
Yeah, I don't watch the Reno shows, the demo shows.
But I also
that's the difference.
Yeah. And I also I will say, and I do like to obviously I like to say, yeah, I don't like that shag carpet, but I also do like that there is. This is maybe too high handed, but there is this thing about creating your home.
Mm-hmm.
And some people like a shag carpet. And that's when I just like to say, wow, different strokes.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, nobody likes that weird fake bear rug I have in my bedroom. But you know who does? Me, with my little tootsies in the morning.
And
so there is that kind of, I do just like to see the way people live in the same way that it's not necessarily that I feel superior so much as I just like to see that diorama, you know?
Yeah.
That's just interesting.
I want to talk about one other thing, which is the tiny house.
Currently,
the thing, not just on HGTV, but on some of these other channels, is the tiny house show.
Ugh.
How do you feel about the tiny house show, Kat?
Well, okay, so I have like so many mixed feelings about Tiny House Hunters because, I mean,
it's the house that's tiny, not the hunter.
That's a good clarification. Yeah. So it's these people who really say that they want to have this downsize their home so that they can enjoy other things in life, you know, like go travel or something, but still own property. And at first, I was so furious with this show because it's people who want to fit king-size beds or they're like five German shepherds inside a 200-square-foot home. But then, I don't know, as I started watching more and more and more because they'd been having these huge marathons this past summer, I realized that, like, I started getting that inkling, kind of like what Glenn was saying.
Like,
and
I could do
that. Yeah, like, there's something nice about not having stuff.
If you want to feel like you are definitely not the kind of person who would go on House Hunters International and say a line like, I don't think that lap pool is big enough for our dogs.
Right, yeah.
You know, if you want to be not that guy,
right,
then it might appeal to you.
I feel superior to that guy.
Yeah, of course you do. However, I live in a 700-square-foot apartment, which is kind of why I got the second house. And I feel no desire to go even smaller and less and more Spartan.
No, that's
I just don't. I've never watched any of those shows because I just don't
find it. Another show that I wanted to bring up also was, so a lot of these shows that we've talked about are all about like the couple going on an adventure together for the most part,
right,
or agreeing.
Sure.
One show that I really just have started despising is Love It or List It, because it really just pits it's very heteronormative, like the husband and the wife against each other. And there's one person who wants to stay or leave.
So in this show, there is a real estate agent and there is a renovator slash designer.
Hillary and David.
And Hillary, the renovator slash designer, renovates your current house. David takes you out to look for a new house. David wants you to buy a new house. Hillary wants you to stay in your existing house. And you have to decide at the end, did she do enough to get you to stay in your current house? Or did he show you a house so great that now you just have to move?
So what are the odds? How's it break down? 50-50? Exactly.
That's a good
50-50?
Question.
I feel like a lot of times people leave because Hillary just messes the house up even more.
I feel like people often stay. I feel like people often stay. And my feeling, and I don't know if you agree with this, Kat, but I feel like in this show, as you were saying, the heteronormativity plays out in that the husband wants to leave and the wife wants to stay.
Right, yeah.
If the issue is the husband wants like more space or whatever, the ones where the husband wants to stay, a lot of times he's just annoyed and he doesn't want to move, it seems like.
That's true.
I don't know. But go ahead. You were saying it pits them against each other.
It pits them against each other. And it gets, well, first of all, the hosts, David and Hillary, they're pitted against each other. And it's this whole, like, there's this like weird underlying sexual tension that HGTV totally tried to play up in some commercials that then went away really quickly. I don't know if you guys saw them. It was like last year, kind of winterish. and I actually tried really hard to find them on YouTube. Because I was like, am I seeing
this
things
thing?
Like they're like she has
was that
like
a fever dream?
Yeah, was it actually a dream? A fantasy? No, but so it starts with the two hosts being pitted against each other, and then like the rest of the show is just this couple fighting, and I don't love that because like I go to watch HGTV not to have stress about spouses, but
although I do go to HGTV to see relationships between people and between couples in particular, because that is another sort of enjoyable thing, because then you look around the house and you note the things that you were forced into keeping or that belonged to a previous marriage.
Weirdly, on House Hunters, Leslie and her friend.
But I will say on that point, this is the other thing I was going to say, and this goes back to Trading Spaces.
Yeah,
Trading Spaces and all these HGTV shows have had gay couples before scripted television had very many of
them. That's true.
And so although there may sometimes be the woman and her friend, Fran, there are also quite a lot of all of these where it is a gay couple, is an out gay couple. And they were doing that, I think. My recollection is there were gay couples on Trading Spaces. And that at the time was... That was well ahead of scripted in my recollection, in terms of like not never, in terms of it being kind of something that happened relatively regularly and frequently. I feel like they were ahead of scripted.
Yep.
All right. Well, I want to hear from all of you. I want to know, do you watch house hunting shows, tiny house hunting shows? I could not live in a tiny house. But you should come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. Tell us what houses you like to watch on TV. Tell us whether you would love it or list it. And, of course, tell us which Property Brother is better. I have an opinion.
Jonathan.
I am a Jonathan person as
well. I concur to Jonathan.
We are all Jonathan people. Drew people, step forward. Make your argument.
Or that third brother who everyone forgets about.
That's right. But he's rarely on the show, though, except they're one where they make over their own house.
Do you know if you type in Property Brothers, one of the is third brother?
That comes up. All right. Well, when we come back, we've already talked about home shows. Now we're going to talk a little bit about food shows. We are staying on the domestic front when we come right back.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message come from Whole Foods Market. This week, Whole Foods is having sales. But this week isn't really special because every week, Whole Foods Market has sales. They've put yellow stickers and signs all over the store so you can find the highest quality food at the best price, including meat and poultry from farmers and ranchers committed to quality and taste, and organic produce grown without toxic pesticides. So keep an eye out for yellow the next time you shop, and visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to see this week's specials.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Before the break, we were talking about HGTV and a lot of home renovation and house hunting shows. Now we're going to shift gears a little bit and we're going to talk about cooking and food shows. Now, obviously, we could do this for hours and hours. So be prepared. It's not a Wikipedia page on food shows. But I do want to know, Barry, are you a food show person?
Oh, my God. I am such a food show person, which is amazing because not amazing. I think it's probably this may be common for you, but I don't cook. I'm not a cook, mm-hmm. but I think it's an extension of my love of reading cookbooks. And I'm a huge Top Chef almost every season. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've missed a season. Yeah. I feel like maybe there was
That's
one that I
soon.
Missed in a move.
Masters and All Stars included?
Not all the Masters, but all the All Stars.
Did you watch Top Chef Just Desserts?
Ugh.
I occasionally will dig into that if I've gone through all the Top mm-hmm. Chefs and it's on the Comcast.
The streaming.
Or, excuse
mm-hmm.
me, the streaming, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I really enjoy about it is that, A, I'm a Padma fan.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I love her
She's great.
Oddness. I love her chilly demeanor that occasionally will blossom into warmth and a piece of information that says, I actually know about food, which mm-hmm. is a thing,
oh,
and not
does,
just
yeah.
these jumpsuits,
yeah.
right. which I really,
appreciate, really appreciate,
as you know, because I am kind of the jumpsuit editor of NPR.
But you're right about the chilliness. There is yeah. something she's holding back, but her voice is always
yes.
so luxurious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. yeah, like her
like
hair.
Caramel.
I
yeah.
love, so that is wonderful. And then I just love the odd characters. I love how you know that at least once an episode, somebody's going to say, I'm doing it for Zoe.
Yeah.
I'm doing it for my kids. I'm doing it for my mom.
Of
and,
course.
You know, and that's like a moment where it's like, oh.
Yeah, that's who's going to get eliminated.
Exactly. And you like turn, and you're like, this is, you're yeah. going home at the end of this. Or you're going to have like a come from behind win and, you know, after you cut your finger off while mm-hmm. slicing an eggplant.
Right.
You know, I look forward to the mise en place. Restaurant wars is a thing
oh,
I
yeah.
like,
oh, yeah.
get
so
really
good.
Excited
so
about. I get the right food for before I sit down.
Yeah.
I love it. So Top Chef is its own category. But
right.
I will also say I have been watching Chef's Table.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's beautifully
Although
done.
Although I now realize. And it's, yeah, it's beautifully done. It's almost... too beautifully done, would you say, maybe?
Have well,
you
why?
Seen in this way that, like, sometimes the food is so lovingly photographed that it seems like a parody of itself, where it's
yeah.
like, is this camera going to go around this entire tomato in such a way that I wish the tomato had underpants on? You know what I mean? Like, it can get real crazy. And then there is this, and I know I have to stop talking about this at some point, but the difference between the male and the female chefs on Chef's Table is so much fun to watch and then also maddening in that the male chefs are just like, I don't know, I just wanted to create something. I just felt like so creative and it was a thing that I was into. And then the female chefs are like, well, yes, I had to, you know, in my country, I had to, and in this country, I had to fight against all of the,
right.
you know, oppression.
Sure.
And in
it's
general,
really hard for
what's
me.
Amazing is that the female chefs kind of don't talk about it
right.
very
yeah.
much. You know,
yeah.
they're just in there slicing.
Right.
And I wanted to play, because just so that you get an idea, because I don't think Chef's Table is so much the juggernaut that
mm-hmm.
Top Chef is, just so you get a flavor of the epitome of the male chef. I wanted to play this clip of, this is Francis Mallmann from Patagonia, and he's talking about, he has many children. The most recent is this adorable, I think she's Heloisa, little girl from who's about 2.5, and he's talking about his relationship with her mother.
Love is one of the most difficult things in life, certainly the most beautiful one. It's difficult, I think, that living together, it destroys passion. And I hate all this thing of the faithfulness. Part of us, we are animals in some sort of a way, and there's a beauty in that.
I yeah. am a person who, like, I think you can create a family any way you want, but his entire cuisine is really created on this, I must be free.
Yeah.
To be an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, in the meantime, you have this lady who's living with you 10 days for a year and doing all the
sure.
childcare. And the what. So, but you also get a sense of how, you know, you have like the undertone of the music and he mm-hmm. is
oh,
so
yes.
love.
Mm-hmm.
It is certainly one of the most beautiful.
It's very
and
dramatic.
So is
We're
the
an
steak.
Animal. It's very dramatic.
So, Kat, you watch HGTV shows. Do you watch food shows?
I do. I watch a lot of variety too. I actually don't have a favorite, but the most recent kick that I've been on is, you know, know, the more traditional style of Barefoot Contessa. And then also in that same afternoon block, Pioneer Woman, which is basically the same show, but set on that huge...
No Jeffrey.
Yeah, no Jeffrey, but, you know, the other guy's name on their enormous farm. Mm-hmm. And I really like the shows recently where the host is trying to create a series of meals for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
Because there's something nice and very compartmentalized about that. The other question that I wanted to pose to you guys is, what happened to Alton Brown? Because I remember growing up,
a big deal, yeah.
One of my favorite shows was watching Good Eats,
yes.
where I would watch that show to learn so much about like the science of cooking or like how to crack an
I
egg
I said
properly.
Molecule all the time when I was watching that show.
I felt like it was really an instructional show, and it felt, I mean, wacky and kind of like a Bill Nye-ish equivalent.
I agree.
And I always looked forward to it because I knew that it was just going to kind of
teach
change,
you something. Yeah,
change how I thought about something. And now he's kind of been going off onto that cutthroat kitchen thing where it's the wacky.
I was gonna say, he's still a big deal. He's just
a different big deal. He's a different type of big deal.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily bad. It's personally not my taste. Mm-hmm. But his competition shows have veered off from the kind of more, you know, normal Chopped where you get these mystery ingredients to ones where he puts you in situations where it's like summer camp themed and you're cooking on a canoe in the lake and maybe you have to dress up as a bear or something like that.
Yeah, it seems like he's doing less work though. He's in the host mode as opposed to he was 100% of that show of Good Eats. I mean, you could tell he was involved. He was a producer. He was,
writing,
he was on camera
the whole
the time. It, you know, I think that's what he promoted himself upwards, I think is what he did. I watch Top Chef, Masters, and All-Stars. I'm aware of Chopped's work. I've seen a couple Iron Chefs. Good Eats, of course. But for me, these shows, I feel a distance to them that I feel that I don't feel with other reality competitions. The only other two reality competitions I watch are Drag Race and Project Runway. And there, because they are purely visual, right? Drag Race is performance, and I don't know anything about drag. I don't know anything about fashion, but I have an opinion. That's the Weldon family crest. I don't know anything, but I have an opinion. And I feel like I can engage with it in a way that I can't immediately engage with a show about food because all I can tell is what it looks like, which is why I think on the shows like Top Chef, the judges assume such a central importance.
I think that's right.
Your
entire
experience.
You are in their hands.
Description. That's exactly right, Barry. They must be able to not just say it's good. They must be able to at least evoke the experience and say something specific. This is why Tom Colicchio is so good. And a guy who doesn't get a lot of shout-outs, he deserves. He is such a personality is Hugh Atchison, right? The guy.
Hugh Atchison's good.
Hugh Atchison is so funny and friendly, but judgmental. When he's on screen describing something and describing why he's disappointed in something, I feel connected to those shows in a way that I just don't necessarily feel with something like Chopped or another show, especially Iron Chef, where it's just people saying people who don't necessarily have a lot of training in food offering opinions the way I would offer an opinion, which is not knowing anything.
Right. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think you're right that the judges in Top Chef take on that special importance because it matters enormously whether you trust them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I look at Project Runway, exactly for the reasons that you're saying, it doesn't really matter that much whether I agree with whoever it is, with whoever the judge is. And that's kind of why they can have these rotating guest judges who really cares.
Yeah.
On Top Chef, I do think you're anchored by those main judges, by Padma, who I think people have really kind of come to understand knows a lot about food, and Colicchio. And I will say, Stephen Thompson, who would normally be on this show but is out this week, Stephen and I, when we were in L.A., treated ourselves to dinner at Colicchio's restaurant, Kraft. That was a good dinner.
Yep.
It was very good food, and even more, you could understand where his frustration with people who don't do good service and people who don't care about guests comes from, because you feel when you're in that place, and it costs a lot, right? You pay for it. But you feel when you are in that place almost like a guest at someone's house.
Right.
You are so catered to and you are so attended to, and there are so many nice little touches. Like at the end, they brought us these little packets of granola. Just like to take with you.
Wow.
It's just like a little thing. It's labeled Kraft. You take it with you. Later, you put it on some yogurt. It was really good.
And you remember your wonderful meal.
It's just, it's unnecessary little touches like that. With him, I trust him so much because, and I did before, but I find that now that I've been to that place, I even more have that feeling of, like, he's serious about this. Mm-hmm. He knows. But if you follow him on Twitter, you know that he's also very serious about hunger issues and mm-hmm. a bunch of other stuff that he's very passionate about.
He's very serious, period.
One show I really want to give honorable mention to, because for exactly the reason that we were just talking about in terms of describing food, is Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern. Hmm. He is so wonderful. Another really enthusiastic, charismatic guy. And Bizarre Foods is that you go around the world and you mm-hmm. eat the weirdest thing. His gift for describing texture, you know, the way it feels when it's in your mouth, the kind of smell it has, the good and the bad about it. And this is not a judging show. This is more of a, you know, we're taking you around
travelogue,
the world. Exactly. So it's, in general, he is always going to find something good about it. But in this way of, like, I remember there's this great line where he walks into a cheese shop in France and he says, the feet of God. You know, I mean, he has
such a
gift for, you know, the murky flavors of this or the dirtiness of that, you know, just a real gift.
Yeah. I will represent for a bunch of different shows that are clearly too low class for most of you people.
No.
I watch a lot of Chopped, watched a lot of Chopped. Chopped is a really fun show, which resembles the way I actually cook at home more than maybe any other show, mm-hmm. for real. And there's some truth to the fact that Chopped is really good for learning, like, you can take any sweet thing and use it as a sweet thing. You can take a salty thing and it plays the same role as another salty thing. I actually think those are valuable lessons for more improvisational kinds of cooks. And I am a reasonably good improvisational cook in terms of putting something together that I like. And I believe that my long history of watching Chopped, but also watching whether it's, you know, Rachel Ray or Barefoot Contessa or Pioneer Woman or whatever these shows are, I do think they have made me more confident about being like, you would put this with this. You would not put this with this over here. I have watched a lot of Hell's Kitchen, although I freely acknowledge that is not for learning about food.
Mm-mm.
That is just for seeing people yell at each other and hearing,
Hearing
Gordon Ramsay come up with ways to describe things. The famous, this looks like Gandhi's flip-flop description, which is terrible in a bunch of ways, but was quite a line. And I think his most popular show right now is MasterChef Junior, which a lot of people, including me, really, really have enjoyed the way he works with kids. And there are a bunch of, there's also a Chopped Junior.
And it's cool to see Gordon Ramsay kind of play that softer role because he is so good at that.
Yeah. No, he's very sweet with them. Yeah. He's very sweet with them.
So speaking of kind of more inspirational shows, one show that I really love that's on CNBC that I watched a lot kind of early this year is Restaurant Startup, which would come on kind of like right after Shark Tank, which is another show I love.
It's a Shark Tank type show.
Yeah, where basically you have two people who are competing at first to pitch their restaurant startup idea to these wealthy investors, also restaurant types who are very embedded in the food industry. And then it's like the typical, you start your restaurant, we give you X amount of money and go do it. There's something about watching these people who haven't had a chance to like get that kind of capital before, get a real chance. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how real that show is or how fake it is or whatever. I don't really want to know for this one, but I like seeing all those business plans because it kind of makes me think like, oh, I could open a food truck.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and speaking of food trucks, I think I would shout out the great food truck race, which just started up again, which Glenn talked about long ago.
It's coming back, a show about parking.
As Glenn pointed out, often a show about parking, but a show that I like. And there used to be one that was sort of similar to that was called something like The Next Great American Restaurant. I can't remember what it was, but people would, similar to what Kat was describing, people would come in and describe a restaurant concept. The only thing I remember about that show was that there was a grilled cheese restaurant and it didn't win. And I thought that was ridiculous.
Obviously,
that is ridiculous.
I wanted a grilled cheese restaurant. Again, we have scratched the surface of cooking shows.
Right.
There
so
is a
many.
Whole world of PBS. Somebody is going to write me a very angry email if I don't say Julia Child. Obviously, Julia Child. There is a long, beautiful history of PBS cooking shows. There's a long, beautiful history of lots and lots of kinds of stuff. Tell us about your favorite food and cooking shows and all the things that you've learned to make by watching them. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week. And let's face it, every week, what is making us happy this week? So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Chipotle. For 23 years, they've been committed to sourcing the best, most noble ingredients they can find, prepping them with care, and cooking them using simple recipes, without the use of artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. They spend hours marinating, seasoning, and pampering the ingredients to perfection. Whether they're hand chopping, hand slicing, hand dicing, or hand mashing, the ingredients at Chipotle get the royal treatment every day.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, the main thing that's making me happy is our upcoming West Coast tour, and tickets are on sale now as you listen to this. And as of Thursday night, we have a little update on how ticket sales are, so you can make plans. The show in Seattle on Monday, October 17th, featuring the great Audie Cornish. There's still tickets for that, so snap them up. Portland on Wednesday, October 19th, also with Audie. There are still tickets for that. Unfortunately, the show in San Francisco on Friday, October 21st, featuring the great Mallory Ortberg, is sold out, but don't lose hope. Maybe keep paying attention, because I'm sure some will free up closer to the date, but you're out of luck there. And then finally in Los Angeles, the show on Sunday, October 23rd, with the wonderful, funny, amazing Kumail Nanjiani. That is, ooh, that's awful close. There are only standing room seats left, and not many of those. So if you hear this on Friday morning and you're in Los Angeles and you want to come, now would be a great time to get them. So that's the tour update. And as for what else is making me happy, the webcomic XKCD, doesn't need me to recommend it. It's huge. It's fantastic. It's wonderful, by Randall Monroe. And he's got a book called What If? : Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions, which is hugely entertaining. I'm going to throw a curveball here and say the audiobook of that particular ostensibly comic is also really well done. It's divided up into little short little bits. It's a lot of fun. So that's What If? : Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions.
Wow, that is wonderful. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Kat Chow, what is making you happy this week?
A very lovely, wonderfully written story. It's called The Paper Menagerie by Ken Liu. And it won the Hugo Award, the Nebula Award, the World Fantasy Award, a lot of sci-fi fantasy awards. And it's this short story basically about a young Chinese-American boy who grew up in Connecticut. So there are a lot of similarities, who really was trying to work out, you know, being Chinese American and like whether or not, like how much he should assimilate to this country. And it also got into his relationship with his mother. So as you can tell, it hits very close to home. So I totally recommend it. That's The Paper Menagerie by Ken Liu. And he also has a bunch of other short stories that are apparently amazing.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Kat Chow. Barry Hardiman, what is making you happy this week, lady?
When I was on vacation, I went and saw Fun Home, which unfortunately I think is in its last week this week. I was very, very moved by it. This is a musical based on the graphic memoir by Alison Bechdel. And I read it in a different way, which I now understand from talking to Glenn, is that I finally have been able to read the images in a way that I had not been able to engage in graphic novels and comics before. And so then that led me to the rest of her. I read The Essential Dykes to Watch Out For. Highly recommend detailed, wonderful, interesting work. And now I'm on to Raina Telgemeier and all these other things. And I'm sitting here with a recommendation that Glenn just gave me. So I had this real breakthrough. And I just realized how important the images are. And I'm kind of a speed reader. I've consumed so much reading that it's been hard for me to do that. And I finally am reading them. And the thing that's really making me happy is that now I can have these experiences reading them with my son, who is starting to become interested in them. And I realize how powerful, I mean, obviously images are powerful, but they can be, particularly when, you know, I'm thinking of Raina Telgemeier, when you are showing a child a thing that is happening, when you're showing, you know, middle schooler being mean to another middle schooler, that visual can create, I think, even more empathy for a child because they can see the kid alone at the lunch table.
Sure. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I just want to pick up on that. I mean, I hear from so many people who didn't grow up reading comics that they don't really get the experience. They don't understand, especially with, you know, very serious graphic novels. What they're doing is the most natural thing in the world. If you grew up a reader, you're bouncing from word balloon to word balloon without really looking, without really feeling the images. And comics exist in the tension between word and image. They're not just words with pictures.
Right.
And the best artists, the best creators create a tension there and use it.
Yeah.
And people like Raina Telgemeier is a master at it. People like Alison Bechdel are also perfect at it. So to get that 360-degree experience, it's a matter of training yourself. It doesn't happen the first time.
Yeah.
So you have to give it more than one shot.
All right. I got two this week. One is just real quick. If you look on YouTube and you look up Congratulations Hamilton, I think you'll find the final Ham for Ham that they did, which is the little outside Hamilton, outside the theater, was a performance of a song called Congratulations, which is a sarcastic, angry song cut from the show. And Renee Elise Goldsberry, who's been playing Angelica, it's in a song of Angelica's, performed it. And it is essentially Angelica giving Alexander Hamilton a much bigger, fatter piece of her mind at the time of the Reynolds pamphlet than you get in the final show. And I looked at it and I thought, I really wish this had been in the show because it's a, I feel like it's an anger moment. I want people to watch it. I feel like it's an anger moment that she needs in that show, right, to be fully realized. Yeah. And I wish it had stayed in.
Let's review. You took a rumor a few, maybe two people knew, and refuted it by sharing an affair of which no one has accused you. I begged you to take a break, you refused to. So scared of what your enemies will do to you. You're the only enemy you ever seem to lose to. You know why Jefferson can do what he wants? He doesn't dignify schoolyard taunts with a response. So yeah, congratulations.
Angelica.
You've redefined your legacy. Congratulations.
My other thing is a little bit of a spoiler alert for an upcoming episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. We have been talking a little bit about Documentary Now, which is about to come back on IFC. One of their parodies is a sort of a send-up of The War Room, which is a 1993 documentary about the first Bill Clinton campaign with Stephanopoulos and James Carville and all this stuff. So I went and I watched The War Room, which it turns out is on Hulu, which has been kind of beefing up its film library a little bit, I think. They have a deal with Criterion, and it's actually through that. So The War Room is such a wonderful, interesting time capsule, both for the ways in which you look at it and you say, boy, it's really hard to imagine something like this happening now, one of which is the dating of James Carville, who was on the Clinton campaign, and Mary Madeline, who was on the Bush campaign. You really think, like, can you imagine this now? Highly placed campaign operatives in two competing presidential campaigns who could be publicly in a romantic relationship and just kind of be like, well, we just disagree. It's interesting to ponder, would that happen now? Why or why not? But also because there are all these figures who pop up in this movie where you're like, even back then, there's a whole scene of James Carville yelling about Roger Ailes. And this is 1993. So it just reminded me how long a lot of our public political stories really are, and particularly how long, in this case, the Clinton story has been. I think if you are interested in that kind of thing, it's a really nice moment to rewatch The War Room, some of which will undoubtedly make you angry no matter what your politics are, and some of which will probably be very funny to you no matter what your politics are. So again, The War Room, currently streaming on Hulu and about to be lampooned on Documentary Now. So that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can follow Kat at Kat Chow. That's K-A-T-C-H-O-W. You can follow Barry at B. Hardiman, B-H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy and our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our In and Out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks. And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Check out NPR's Bullseye with Jesse Thorne, an excellent guide to what's good in pop culture. Every week, Jesse Thorne interviews people like Elvis Costello, Rashida Jones, and Mike Judge about their creative work and lives. Find your new favorite TV shows, books, movies, and music, and gain new insights into the things you already love. Find Bullseye now on the NPR One app and at npr.org/podcasts.